you get now that kind of thing in the school playground. Oh, that top is really gay, or those shoes are really gay, or that expression's really gay, or that music's really gay. Obviously, that's not as horrendous as being told you're disgusting and gay sex is this, that, and the other. But at the same time, you do subliminally absorb a message that being gay is less than, and that there's something wrong with it, that it is something to be insulted about.
That's Matt Cain, editor of Attitude magazine.
We're asking, why are some gay men homophobic? On this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm Naz Jantavakoli-Farr, but you can call me Naz. And we have a special co-host for this episode.
I'm James Barr. I present MTV News. I write for Attitude magazine. And I am the co-host of one of the UK's LGBT podcasts, A Gay and a Non-Gay. We offer a unique viewpoint on the LGBT community in that one of us, not me, is outside of it.
And it is a brilliant podcast. You should all subscribe to it. We're super excited to have you, James.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. I should also say that my podcast is about marginalising non-gay people like yourself, Naz, so that you can see how it feels.
But I love listening to it. I think it's wicked.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. So usually Jonathan Freeman is our co-host. He's in DC. But for this episode, we wanted to have you along. So it's, we're asking, why are some gay men homophobic?
Yeah, I wanted to put this question to Naz. I wanted her to delve, I wanted her to dig deep on this question because it's something I think a lot of gay people wonder about. And having seen friends of mine say homophobic things to each other and to me, I think it's an interesting one to go in on. And I love your podcast, so I'm excited to hear where this goes.
It's interesting because when you put the question to me, I was thinking a little bit about my own experiences as a straight woman. And obviously this is only my experiences, but I feel like I live in a place and a time where there's a lot more people are more liberal than ever, I'd guess, especially in the sort of circles I move in. So I was really interested in the sort of maybe the subtle forms of homophobia these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're in a very privileged position.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we're all battling different things all the time, but living in London and being in a very liberal bubble like we both are, we are lucky and we don't see as much of it as others. But you only have to watch Twitter during a gay contestant or a slightly camp contestant being on X Factor to notice how a lot of gay people can accidentally present themselves with an inverted homophobia.
Well, also, I guess it's because being a woman as well, you see this with feminism too, where we're probably living in a super feminist time, but then I see the forms of misogyny being really subtle and quite hard to call
out. And sometimes not even subtle. I worked with a girl who today said, why is there an International Women's Day? Why don't men have one? And I was like, girl, they have every other day of the year. 364 days of the year are about men. What's going on?
Everything is about the men.
Right.
So what's
it's
the
so
concern?
Interesting how people don't realise they're being anti-feminist, even if they are a woman. My mum's probably the same, bless her. But that's just because they've been socially conditioned. We all have to an extent. So I don't get annoyed about people being homophobic within the community or being anti-feminist if they're a woman, because I think it's just to do with education and social conditioning.
So I guess I'm really interested in not just the question of why are some gay men homophobic, but what form does that take today compared to 10 years ago or something?
Yeah.
I'm wondering has the nature of homophobia changed?
That's interesting.
Is it harder to call out now? What is it like now?
I mean, I feel like it's easier to call out now, but I think it's definitely become more subtle. It must have done. I reckon most people don't realise that they're even doing it.
Huh. But when you say it's easier to call out, you mean, what do you mean by that?
I mean, if you can see it, it's okay for me to say to a friend, that's really homophobic, or you've got an issue with inverted homophobia, or you hate yourself. Don't project that on other people just for living their true self, right?
So that conversation can take place now, and it couldn't, I don't know.
I think I'm more educated about it, so I could happily have that conversation now. But also, homophobia isn't acceptable. It's illegal, right?
Yeah.
We've gone from a place where gay sex was illegal between men to being in a place where homophobia is illegal. Yeah. And that's fantastic. So it's a lot easier to call that out, I think, than it was.
But then you talked about the subtle forms. So you mean like the ways in which homophobia are expressed are more subtle?
No, I'm just wondering. I'm not saying anything is or isn't.
Okay.
I'm just interested to know, like you just said, you know, is it more subtle? So I'm really looking forward to you untangling this for me, Naz.
Okay, that's a big task, but I'll see what I can do. So I'm going to speak to Matt Cain. He is the editor of Attitude magazine. That's one of the biggest gay magazines in the UK. But first, we're going to hear from Matthew Todd. He's the author of Straightjacket, which is a book that you've read.
Yes, I love it. I think The Velvet Rage, another book which I would recommend, and Straightjacket dive in on this issue, and both are really important for the mental health of gay people.
Here's Matthew Todd.
If we've received these messages from society, from our parents, from our family, from school, from our friends, from the media, from government, from religion, and so on and so on and so on, that being LGBT, or even being a boy who may act like a girl, or a girl who may act like a boy, whatever it may be, if we've received those messages that that's a negative and that's a wrong, and sometimes we've been made to feel in fear of our lives or in fear of threat of physical violence or being thrown out of homes, we become hypervigilant, hypersensitive. What is it about me that is giving those messages out? So when you start to see yourself as a threat and you really feel, and it's true, you know, there can be a physical threat to us LGBT people, as many people listening will know. When you feel under threat and you feel it's something that you are doing that is kind of, you know, bringing this threat to you, and that's obviously flawed thinking because no one deserves a threat of physical violence or any kind of negativity. You know, being ourselves is absolutely fine. It should be okay to be ourselves, but obviously not everybody in society reacts that way to us. So when we subconsciously perceive ourselves as doing something which brings a threat to us, we can start to dislike ourselves, to internally not like ourselves, to feel, perceive ourselves as a threat. And so that thing about us, effeminacy in men or whatever it may be, gayness, signs of gayness, or being, you know, a masculine woman or whatever it might be, when we see that in other people, we can hate them because we don't like that in ourselves, and we cannot like that in other people. I have a friend who was very overweight, and even though he's slim, he still has a problem with overweight people, and he doesn't say things to them, but because he didn't like that part of himself, he projects it onto other people and doesn't like them. So this is a huge problem for us, and I think it can become so overwhelming that we feel so bad about ourselves that when we drink or take drugs or have sex, that buzz that we get from doing those things can be such a great relief to the terrible disease we feel, that feeling of, you know, not being at ease, that we do them more and more and more, and that's when we can get locked into addiction. And so this problem of self-loathing, which we see on the gay scene a lot, which is people being unkind to each other, being bitchy to each other, men on Grindr telling each other you're not masculine enough, that's a real problem. The great thing is we can address it. I talk about it in my book Straightjacket. And I really hope that the LGBT community can come together and finally do something about this and heal ourselves and heal one another in a spirit of love, forgiveness and togetherness. I think it's really important.
That was Matthew Todd, author of the book Straightjacket. Now, he gave us a really good overview and background on this question of why some gay men are homophobic. We're keen to delve in more, and especially to look into the more contemporary forms of homophobia by gay men, and to see how homophobia has changed over the past few decades. We're living in an age where gay men have more rights and recognition than probably ever before. And given that, how has the nature of homophobia changed? Also, I'm always generally especially interested in finding out about the more subtle and less obvious ways in which people are shamed, because these can often be very damaging in their own right, as they're harder to call out, so there can be shame about feeling ashamed in the first place when something is more subtle and indirect and a bit harder to point out. Our next guest is Matt Cain. He's the editor of Attitude magazine, which is a gay lifestyle magazine that is massive here in the UK. I went to their offices here in London to find out more from Matt about this question, why are some gay men homophobic? So Matt, we're just going to have a chat, but we'll just start with the question and then just have a bit of a chat. So our question is, why are some gay men homophobic?
Well, it's all to do with self-loathing and being taught to hate yourself. It's interesting when this question comes up, because I'm always slightly squeamish about gay men, talking about gay men in particular having self-loathing, because plenty of sectors of the population do. A lot of the time people say, why do people self-harm? People say, why do women go back into abusive relationships? if you think about the suffragettes fighting for the women to have the vote, there were plenty of women at the time who thought women shouldn't have the vote, who thought that they were inferior and we had to leave it to the men to run the country. It's because they'd been taught this and conditioning was so strong that they found it difficult to shake off. And in the case of gay men who continue to hate being gay and seeing signs of gayness in other people, or believing, you know, when they were debating gay marriage and civil partnerships, there were plenty of gay columnists who wrote saying, actually, I'm gay and I love myself and I'm all for equal rights, but I don't think we should have equal marriage. Oh, I don't think we should be able to adopt. It's all about the same thing. But any psychotherapist will tell you, if you are trying to uproot any deeply ingrained behaviour or thoughts from somebody, thoughts that are making this person troubled or determining self-abusive, self-destructive behaviour, then you've got to go way back and look at the formative years when these attitudes and these thoughts are conditioned into you.
What about, but just on that point, what about younger gay men? I'm thinking in their sort of late teens, early 20s, is there still quite a lot of homophobia within the community at that age?
Well, clearly there is way, way less homophobia, and it's so much better than I ever could have imagined. But, you know, it's a much, much higher proportion of gay people who are predisposed to anxiety, suicidal thoughts, depression. It's way better than it used to be. And you can see gay characters on TV, not just in dramas, but competing on shows like Dancing on Ice. In every quiz show that you look at, there are gay couples, you know, which is all great. And it basically means that when you're growing up now, you don't feel abnormal because you can see yourself represented. When I was growing up, and, you know, I grew up in the 80s, but if you think about the 90s as well, these positive messages were few and far between. I mean, practically impossible to absorb, to be honest. So it's perfectly normal to, you know, if everything you experience in society, every message you absorb tells you that being the way you are is wrong, quite often you can have a dark, complicated relationship with your own sexuality, mm-hmm. and that can be directed inwards.
I'm wondering, but when I was talking about sort of younger gay men, I'm wondering, are they showing homophobia in a different way now? Because again, like, we are hearing more and more messages than maybe ever before that, like, you gave examples of how there's a lot of gay people in the media compared to like the 80s. Do you still think there is a lot of homophobia that's maybe changed the way it's expressed?
Well, it's interesting. In my day, it was very explicitly expressed disgust, revulsion. You know, you get now that kind of thing in the school playground, oh, that top is really gay, or those shoes are really gay, or that expression's really gay, or that music's really gay. You know, obviously, that's not as horrendous as being told you're disgusting and gay sex is this, that, and the other. But at the same time, you do subliminally absorb a message that being gay is less than, and, you know, that there's something wrong with it, that it is something to be insulted about.
So it's more subtle.
Yeah. And you could argue, I mean, who's to say, I only grew up in one decade, but some people might argue that you know, is more damaging, yeah. because it's you're not quite sure of what's going on, yeah, and it gets in.
Well, then it's kind of, I mean, I guess I experienced this as a woman. It's harder to speak up and call things out when they're a little bit softer or a quote-unquote joke you know?
Well, this is the thing. Bullies always say, can't you take a joke?
Right.
Or this thing that you hear all the time, which seems to be a catch-all excuse for any old insult is, oh, it's just banter.
Right.
As if the problem's yours
for
finding it offensive when somebody's basically just insulted you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's outrageous when you think about it. You know, the fact that so many women should have low expectations of life and what they can achieve when they've been brought up reading books where a woman, that her best hope is that she can marry a handsome prince and become a princess. Is it any wonder? Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's so kind of basic. It's great that we can appreciate the advances that have been made and how much better life is for gay people, queer people in the UK now. But at the same time, we shouldn't need to be pathetically grateful for every crumb of acceptance that mainstream society throws our way. You know, we shouldn't ever be made to feel that we have to settle for anything other than absolute acceptance and total equality.
Yeah, because this is the thing, isn't it? It's like the status quo when they like make a tiny bit of an effort. They act like you're meant to be like so thankful that they made like a tiny bit of effort. I'm wondering, are there things you see now that you think are homophobic that didn't exist when you were growing up? Because I am interested in the sort of the subtlety and how the nature of homophobia might have changed.
Well, funnily enough, a lot of our younger staff here, and I've noticed this with the younger generations in general, there was a lot of talk about 10 years ago about young people being apathetic and young gay people not appreciating the history and the struggles that had gone on in the past. But I actually think my experience is that younger people very much are really aware of that now, and they seem much more woke, or whatever the expression is, or inclined to activism, and they seem to really care and be passionate about the history of LGBT rights and activism.
Matt, the other thing we really wanted to ask about quite a bit was that on the podcast we're doing a lot about redefining masculinity. It's like a big topic in society right now. So I'm wondering how that affects gay men in terms of how they see themselves as men, as gay men, and also homophobia. So like these broader discussions.
Before I was picked on and insulted for being gay, my girliness was always highlighted and latched onto and used against me.
By a gay man?
No, I'm talking about in the school playground. I'm talking about pre-sexuality.
Okay.
You know, and I am the type of gay man who doesn't have passing privilege. It's obvious that I'm gay, I don't pass for straight. And often that comes from any kind of perceived femininity. I mean, it kind of links to, you know, misogyny, basically. Women, you know, society telling all of its members, certainly in the West, that women are inferior. And gay men, you know, we're considered to be less of men and a bit more like women. A lot of the impressions that people used to do of our voices, the way we walk, all those kind of things, it's riffing on our perceived femininity. You were talking about internalised homophobia. And one of the ways this expresses itself a lot is when gay men find any signs of gayness very unattractive. So what happens is that on dating apps, you often get looking for a mask man, mask for mask. No femmes. You get this whole thing going on, this whole culture of femme shaming, camp shaming. And the idea is that those things make us feel like less of a man, make us feel like a bit more like a woman, and therefore less than. And this whole thing, you know, the kind of obvious signs of gayness are often used against us as insults, or we turn it inside and we, you know, stop finding those things attractive in other men. We find them repulsive. And gay on gay shaming for being camp and things is something that's prevalent. You know, you still get quite a lot, you know, the gay men who don't have passing privilege, the people who are very camp, who are what we would have called stereotypically gay, your Graham Nortons, your Alan Carrs, you do get resistance to them from within the gay community. But at the same time, I've certainly noticed myself in a kind of anecdotal experience, I have noticed younger gay or queer men, as they often identify now, embracing their sense of camp in themselves and in other people. And I think that's really encouraging. And maybe it is linked to, you know, attitudes towards women improving and, you know, feminism having another upsurge and, you know, society in general demonising women less, seeing them as less than, you know, less frequently. Maybe there is something in that. I think now there's more of an appreciation that gay men come in all different shapes and sizes and, you know, are just as likely to be into indie music or rock music as they are Kylie and Madonna or whatever younger people listen to now, Britney and Ariana Grande and Little Mix, as they do in our office.
So just to go back to this big discussion of redefining masculinity, how is that coming up in the gay community? Especially given that you're the editor of this magazine, I wonder if there's a certain sort of slant to that that's quite specific, that also affects how gay men see each other.
Well, there is definitely a thing where if we have very camp men featured in the magazine or slender, young, femme-looking gay men, they are less popular with our readers than a very straight-looking, in inverted commas, traditionally masculine man. Another way it expresses itself, actually, am I allowed to be sexually explicit on this podcast?
Do it.
Well, so with gay sex, you know, that you can either be the active partner, the passive partner, or versatile, you can like doing both. There's a real thing in the gay community with bottom shaming. Bottoms, people who are the passive partners, and people being made to feel that they're less of a man. So already as gay men, you're made to feel like less of a man for being gay. But there is definitely a thing where people have been encouraged to think that because you are allowing yourself to be penetrated, that's, you know, what people would think of as a female position sexually, and gay men being made to feel less than for a particular, if they prefer a particular sexual role.
In your early 20s, when you were still sort of, I guess, kind of trying to be more comfortable with yourself, you were more into sort of the more masculine type of man?
Yes.
But do you think that was tied into some sort of, I don't want to say homophobic feeling?
Yes, no, absolutely. Well, the interesting thing about phobia is, you know, we all use homophobia often to talk about hatred and disgust, but phobia actually means fear. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, yeah, I've been bullied all through growing up for being girly, for being camp, for being effeminate. It's perfectly natural, therefore, that I would not like that in myself if everybody had seen it as a source for insults, and therefore I wouldn't celebrate it or look for it in somebody else. You know, it's like, I mean, it's perfectly simple. It's like the child who's called Specky Four Eyes and laughed at for his glasses. He's not going to love wearing glasses. A lot of gay men are on a similar kind of journey, and depending on when they were born and the social background in which they were brought up, it can be more intense and complicated. You know, and it is interesting the subtle ways in which it can express itself, this internalised homophobia or just not being comfortable with who we are.
So you've talked about the generational differences, and I guess we're still in like we're in a much more sort of liberal and tolerant time now, but there's still a lot of mental illness amongst gay people. How does that sort of fit in?
Well, it's exactly the same thing. You know, if you're made to feel that who you are, the way you are, is wrong and a dirty secret you have to hide away from the world, then, you know, these things can warp and twist you from within and, you know, re-emerge as anxiety and depression and, you know, the urge to self-harm, or at worst, commit suicide, or at best, and that's an awful choice of words, but at best, just not be attracted to gay men. I mean, the one big cliche about the gay growing up experience, the coming of age experience, is certainly in my day, loads of gay men would fancy their straight friends, you know, and they'd say, oh, but I don't fancy gay men, you know, and it's because they're so repulsed by the idea of it in themselves. And it's much healthier for them to grow up and actually fancy gay men, you know.
Actually, you said something that made me think. So I don't know if there's a parallel. I'm thinking of, like, as a woman and feminism and stuff, sometimes something that I hear quite a lot amongst women is that they think certain things have gone too far, which I find interesting. We see it a lot in Me Too, where, like, a lot of women thinking, oh, these discussions are going too overboard. And I feel like that's a bit internalised misogyny, because they're like, oh, I don't want to look at it. Is there any sort of parallel? Because, again, I'm wondering if there's sort of new forms of homophobia that are coming about.
Yeah,
being in a more sort of tolerant time.
Yeah, I always find that interesting when women, you know, but we started off by talking about that, actually, didn't we? I always find that interesting when you get women who are resistant to the idea of equality, or
it's just gone too far now.
I know.
Funny one.
But I think that's like a form of misogyny.
Yeah.
And internalised misogyny. And yeah, there are certain people with a lot of internalised homophobia. But I do remember when there was public debate around equal marriage, some gay men saying, we don't need equal marriage. it's a step too far. But actually, I mean, I do think in a country like this, it's purely a symbolic, you know, we had civil partnerships, but I think the use of the word marriage is really important. When I've been to gay weddings and they've been standing on the steps of the register office or whatever, and everybody walking past can see them, it's a really powerful message, you know, pro-equality message.
But
people thinking that
it's gone too far.
Things have gone too far. I've heard straight people say to me all the time, but why do you still need a gay pride? Why can't we have a straight pride? It's like, do we really need to discuss this? I mean, literally.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I feel as a woman, anytime you say anything, men are like, but men as well. And it's like, yeah, but no one said that you can't. Like,
oh, these ridiculous, I know, these ridiculous.
It's not all about you.
Columnists who, you know, write about how they feel like they're being pushed out of society. And
you're a columnist. It's like, you're
I know,
a columnist.
It's like, I know, they've literally, but it's that privilege thing, isn't it? Of just not having to even, just being able to take for granted the privileges that you've had.
Yeah.
It just literally doesn't occur to them.
Yeah. You were talking about apathy earlier. With people who have passing privilege, do you think that there's still a lot of apathy now compared to like before?
Well, it's interesting. When people pass as straight, they definitely have a different experience growing up. As somebody who doesn't pass as straight and never did, proudly so now, I've always empathised with those of us who don't, who've always been thrust onto the front line of the fight for equal rights, whether we like it or not, and whether we're built for it or not. And a lot of people underestimate camp effeminate gays and think that we're soft. Actually, it's usually quite the opposite, because we've had to fight for ourselves from the start. But there were a couple of months last summer when we had Daniel Newman, the actor from The Walking Dead, who came out as bisexual, and Steve Grand, an American singer, who is gay, and there was another one, Gavin Hennigan, an Irish extreme athlete and adventurer. All of them, there was a run of covers and interviews when they talked about how it was really difficult for them to come to terms with being gay and accept their gayness because they weren't aware of it when they were growing up, because other people didn't tell them before they realised it themselves, which is what happened to the likes of me. And when I read the first one, I thought, oh, get over yourself. You've no idea how easy you had it. But actually, when I looked into it more, I realised that they do have other difficulties. And it is a very different journey and experience. And I mean, they all kind of bemoaned the lack of straight acting, for want of a better term, gay role models when they were growing up. I had nobody to empathise with. Obviously, it's completely out of the question they would have empathised with anybody who was camp or effeminate, because, you know, they too would have been taught that those people were loathsome and repulsive. But
so they were in a hard position of not really being able
Not really realising it, and everybody expecting them to go out with girls. And when they tell family members or told family members and friends, it was a big shock. And it was easier for them to lie because people believed the lie. And therefore, when they came out, usually later in life, you're coming out not just as gay, but gay and having lied to people close to you for a long time. And that's quite a complicated thing. You know, there's all kinds of issues of mistrust. And I think when you live a lie, that's not great for your self-esteem, you know, and yeah, you could argue, well, those of us on the front line who don't have passing privilege, we don't have a choice. We can't live a lie. But I think it is more complicated than I initially thought. Actually, I was a bit dismissive of the experiences at the beginning.
So we just heard from Matt Cain, the editor of Attitude magazine, and before that from Matthew Todd, who wrote Straightjacket. So James, what did you think?
Oh my God, I loved listening to both of those. I mean, Straightjacket was very difficult for me to read. It actually took me over a year to read that book, maybe even longer. My therapist read it before me on my recommendation and was like, you need to read this book.
With Straitjacket, when you say it was a bit too much, do you mean it was too familiar, the topics he was talking about? It was too close to home or something?
Yeah, it was difficult reading about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's looking in a mirror, isn't it, effectively? And then listening to Matt Cain talk about everything then is just brilliant. He explains things in such a brilliant way, and he really made me think about a lot of different experiences I've had with friends and colleagues and stuff. And he's slightly older than me, but I think we have a very shared experience. The gay marriage stuff really made me think a lot about how the community, some of the community being critical of British Olympic diver Tom Daley and his husband Dustin Lance Black deciding to go through surrogacy and have a kid. There was a lot of, there was a lot of very critical people online. You could argue again that's inverted homophobia, similar to what happened with gay marriage.
What's interesting that also came up with Matt Cain is this notion of the subtle forms that homophobia takes these days.
Mm.
So I'm kind of quite interested in ways that comes up. Are there things you see now that are more subtle that weren't
happening?
Well,
I don't think it's subtle, actually. I think it's manifesting itself in surprising ways where you didn't expect it before, because something new comes along, like Tom Daley having a surrogacy. So, boom, a new opportunity for homophobia to arrive. I should say inverted homophobia, as that's what we're talking about. But I'm sure there's a lot of homophobia everywhere else as well. What am I saying? I think I'm saying I have an experience I can talk about where it's presented itself in a different form, and that's through the drug PrEP, which is a drug you take to prevent yourself from being able to catch HIV. I've talked about this a lot on my podcast, Again and On Gay. There's an episode called Prepisode, where I've detailed my experience on PEP, which is a preventative drug. Sorry, which is a drug you take after exposure to like bombard your system with antiviral meds to help you not then get HIV. And then PrEP is a drug you take once a day so that if you become exposed to HIV, you have a defense. People would describe it as being similar to the pill.
The contraceptive pill.
But obviously it's not about contraception. But yeah,
it's a preventative.
You take it once a day and it boosts your system so that if HIV was to enter you, it wouldn't be able to latch onto you. I don't exactly know the official way that works. I'm sure the NHS website would help us out with that. But yeah, anyway, sorry. What I'm trying to say is I'm on that now. And I've had people say to me, I've had gay best friends say to me, so I'm now paying for you so that you can be a slut.
Huh.
Because the NHS are doing a trial in England where they're paying for that. So that's nice.
Right. Yeah.
But that's homophobia, I think, from within the community. They're saying they're effectively saying that because I'm having sex, I'm a slut. What? But like what?
Yeah.
Shouldn't I be okay to have sex with people and not worry that I'm going to catch something and then potentially die from it? I think it's quite obvious that that's homophobic.
Yeah,
in a way, inverted, because they're like not, they're saying, they're immediately assuming the reason I'm taking that is so that I can be a slut and have unprotected bareback sex. But that's not at all the reason that I'm taking it. The reason I'm taking it is to prevent me getting drunk and using, like, and then making a stupid mistake by having unprotected sex.
So basically, it's kind of shaming you for having gay sex?
I think so. Okay. I mean, in the episode I just referenced, Prepisode, I talked about it a bit and I kind of describe my experience of having unprotected sex as similar to self-harm, because I know when I've been drunk that I have actively decided not to use a condom. And I know all the risks and I'm educated about what can happen by doing that. But yet I did it anyway. And therefore, I think PrEP has actually really woken me up. And now I feel like I'm in control of my body. Mm-hmm. And what's really weird is that I haven't had unprotected sex since taking it. Mm-hmm. I'm actually now more aware of, like, I'm using condoms anyway, so I'm double protected. But yeah, it's a heavy one to get into, and maybe that's not what we're here for, but I've definitely had people say offensive stuff to me about taking that drug. So I think that's a new way that some gay people would be homophobic, because I don't think my mum, or I mean, my mum isn't homophobic, but I don't think straight people would be offended by that.
Well, it's the use of the word slut that's interesting too.
Really?
Because, well, maybe I picked up on that being a woman, because that's a way of shaming women who have sex. So it's not even like women who have a lot of sex with a lot of people. It's
any woman that has sex.
To some extent, yeah.
Wow.
It can be. It can be. And when you said that, it you know, it was this assumption that...
Yeah.
Either you were having sex with lots of people, or just the fact that you're having sex. Kind of, it's not really anyone's business, either of those things.
Yeah.
Or, like, either of those things are a problem, you know?
Because they shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
We should be allowed to have sex with whoever we want. But we're so badly educated about sex in the UK, and probably around the world. Like, we're told it's about having babies. And actually, we shouldn't be just told that. We should be told, actually, as well, this is a way of enjoying yourself and breathing.
It's funny, because I feel like it's, you know, when you talk about Viagra or, like, some trial into erectile dysfunction or whatever, it's often about sort of straight male sex.
Yeah.
And, like, it's okay to look into problems that straight men might be having with sex. But, like you're saying, if a gay man is having sex or with women, it's kind of like... they're being sluts, or there's some shaming aspect.
It's terrible. Actually, yeah, Matt touched on that. You both touched on that in that interview, talking about parallels between female and gay people, and how gay men are seen as less than because they're effeminate, which is terrible and wrong. But that is a fact. That's definitely what happens in some respects.
Well, that it's interesting, because the two big threads that came up to me after speaking to Matt Cain, because he talked about how gay men are often seen as being less manly, and he also talked about the tie-in with misogyny and homophobia. So I'm wondering two things. So right now we're in this era of rising feminism, so, like, you know, there's, you know, we're hearing about feminism more and more, and women being more empowered, and we're also in an era where men, you know, the role of men is changing, so it's less clear what it means to be a man than it was before.
Great.
Is that well, I'm wondering, how does that affect homophobia or gay men?
That's such a hard question. I can't even get my head around what you mean.
What Matt Cain was referring to was that a lot of homophobia is about shaming gay men for not being manly enough. So it's tied into misogyny as well. So somehow not being manly enough isn't a good thing. Like, it's shameful to not be manly.
Oh, and you're saying that the feminist movement is taking that away from men, potentially, anyway.
Yeah,
so that could help us all out.
Well, I'm wondering, what's the effect if...
basically, like, straight white men are the problem. Is that what we're talking about here?
I don't know. I'm just wondering.
They are a lot of problems. They're causing a lot of problems for everyone, but maybe not the only problem.
But I guess because, like, you know, there's so much debate about what it means to be a man today. So as given that we have less clear-cut ideas on what manliness is...
Well, you know what? No. Like, can I swear? Fuck that. What is it to be a human is really what we should be discussing, not what is it to be a man or a woman or whatever, because, like, gender, fuck that. It's a waste of time. It doesn't mean anything anyway. I hate that we're segregated by gender. It really pisses me off. I'm very triggered right now. But it is stupid to even discuss, like, what is it to be a man? Well... what is it to be a human is what you should be asking.
But my point is that this discussion is happening in society, though.
Right. Well, is it, or is it, how do we tell men that women are as important? Isn't that the conversation that's happening? And then as a side effect, we're talking about does it mean to be a man? I have heard people say, what does it mean to be a man?
Well, we talk about the masculinity crisis a lot. Like, what is the role of men? But I'm wondering, as this shifts, as these conversations take place, does that affect how gay men see each other, and does that affect homophobia?
I don't know. I mean, I wish my co-host, my non-gay Dan Hudson, was here, because it's something I want to talk to him about. Like, well, how does he feel as a straight man? But I know he's fiercely liberal, so he probably enjoys seeing things change and having his masculinity questioned or whatever. But does it affect homophobia? I hope it does, if... you know, men are not becoming less manly, because that's...
well, they're becoming more liberated to be whoever
they are. Yeah, that's great. So if that happens, then that should help everyone. Not just gay men and not just homophobia. But, I mean, really, it doesn't come from that. I think that's one side of it, what Matt was saying. I think it's one side of it. I think mostly it's coming from internal shame from being in the closet. I read a great think piece, and it said that the closet isn't shame-proof, because you can hide your sexuality, but it doesn't stop shame from reeking in through the cracks in the closet. So I think it's based around that more than it is about masculinity, but that definitely comes into it.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I also heard the slut thing is really interesting. I've had that said to me as well about gay marriage. A person I know who I disagree with a lot over issues like this was discussing a friend of mine and his marriage. And he is married to another guy, and they have at times during their marriage invited other people into the bedroom, which I think is probably something that happens for straight couples as well, but is maybe not talked about. I don't know. Do you feel that that's true?
I don't really know. I mean, like, there's loads of different types of marriage and loads of different types of people.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it's a straight or a gay marriage thing. It's just different types of couple.
It's difficult anyway. And this couple, obviously, they've played around, but their friend, the guy I'm just about to talk about, had said, I don't see the point in gay marriage because these sluts pretend that they want to fall in love and meet someone on dating apps, etc. But then they get married and they're still sluts. And I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate him for those comments. Yeah. And I think they're really uninformed and wrong. But it's just interesting. I just wanted to bring it up because we were talking about the word slut.
Yeah. But it is also, because again, it's like a shaming of sex in a way that,
yeah,
I feel like straight men generally just don't get shamed for sex.
Yeah.
So like, if you're not a straight
completely.
Man,
well, there's this whole bro shamed. Culture, isn't there? Probably where blokes have cheated on their wives and they're like, "Nice one, mate. Yeah, what she doesn't know won't hurt her." And you're like,
"Well, it's part of proving, but it's part of proving you've still got it or whatever."
Yeah.
You know, like, I can still,
yeah,
get it's laid.
I mean, I don't know if that does in real life happen, but I see it on in television shows all the time. That narrative exists.
Well,
obviously exists for a reason.
But there's still that narrative of, like, guys of a certain age, if you're sleeping around a lot, you can get respect from other guys. I mean, we had an episode on sex and self-worth with a guy who was talking about getting respect from other men through sleeping with lots of women.
Wow.
So that is still a thing that happens.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if we are living in an age where we're trying to be more free to be whoever we are and trying to do away with gender, so you should be whatever human you want to be, will that eventually do away with homophobia as well? So if we're focused on not what kind of man do I want to be, what kind of woman I want to be, but what kind of person do I want to
be? Yeah, I mean, I think so, actually.
Well, homophobia will disappear that way.
I think so. I think a lot of problems will, and that might be one of them. Ta-ra! Definitely, because actually, and although it's weird for me to just sit here and say, oh, yeah, definitely that. Like, that's the simple solution to everything. But in a way, it kind of is. Like, we did a story on MTV News today about the price of girls' toys and clothing versus boys. And, like, girls' clothing, which is identical but pink, was 37% more expensive. There were a pair of rollerblades at Argos that were the same rollerblades for boys and girls, and the girls' ones were 37% more. Mm. Like, what a load of bollocks. And having read an amazing book by a trans author friend of mine called Juno Dawson, called The Gender Games, I know that there's a quote from the World Health Organization about gender. And can I read it to you?
Yeah.
It's so good. The World Health Organization, who are kind of like a big deal, right? They say that gender refers to the socially constructed role, behavior, activity, and attribute that a given society considers appropriate for men and women. Doesn't that just tell you that it's a load of BS?
Yeah.
Like, so get rid of that, and then maybe, yeah, we'll all be fluid, free, and fabulous. In this episode of The Gender Knot, we heard from Matthew Todd, author of Straight Jacket, and Matt Kane.
It was presented by me. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm James Barr. You can follow me on Twitter and all the socials at I'm James Barr.
It was co-produced by Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. We'll be back next week with Jonathan Freeman.
We'll speak to you then. Bye for now.